Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight number 100. About what to do for number 100, we thought, shall we throw in a lavish party held in a top nightclub in London, or shall we just talk about a few special things?
Well, given that we're all snowed in and can't make it to the top class party in London with everybody that we hired and all the food and everything we laid out, we're going to have to do a normal show, aren't we?
That's our excuse. Oh, thank you.
Excellent.
So, rather than happy party, we're going to look back very briefly at where we've come in the last 10 years or so, and a few thoughts on where we might be going in the next 10. And I know, Rafe, you've been thinking along these lines for an editorial, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It struck me that we so often talk about the technology and, you know, the absence of something or where we're going. It's just worth sometimes remembering just how far we've come in the last 10 years. Now, as most people know, Symbian sort of last year celebrated their 10th anniversary. We're really talking about 10 years since the first Symbian phone started coming out, of course, with the 9210 and subsequently with the 7650 for Series 60, now S60, of course, and the P800 for UIQ. And I'm sure Ewan's going to jump in and correct me on some of the first phones, something like the...
Yeah. The 7650, we could call it Series 60 then. So you can say it had Series 60, now S60. Not S60, now S60. So the marketing drones are getting into your brain, even in the historical stuff.
Okay, thank you, Ewan. But just thinking about what we had in those devices, we're talking about a VGA camera in the 7650. And now anything less than a 3-megapixel camera is dismissed as not worth having.
And we had 3.5 meg of RAM.
Yeah, indeed. And the same thing goes with the memory. The 7650 didn't even have a memory card slot, and I think was something like 8 megabytes of internal memory. I can't remember the exact details.
I think it was four.
Four, there we go. So, you know, now it's pretty amazing in 10 years to think about where we come from. But also the technology in terms of being able to connect to, the idea of applications has become mainstream, the idea of services. You know, of course, in that same period, we've seen the rise of Google. You know, who would have predicted 10 years ago that Symbian's major competition would come from a platform put together by a search engine? I mean, that was the day when InfoSeek still ruled the search engines on the web.
But wasn't it AltaVista in those days?
Well, AltaVista, in fact, there was no one supreme search engine. I mean, even now, I suppose you could say there's competition, but I think nothing is dominant as Google. And if you'd looked at the competition, I think everyone would have assumed it would have come from someone like Microsoft or possibly Palm. And in those 10 years, of course, we've seen Palm pretty much implode. It's been, reborn, but perhaps not as successfully as Palm would like. And Windows Mobile has its own set of problems, although I wouldn't write them off as readily as some people would. But equally well, we had the analysts in that same time write Symbian off. You know, we said by 2010, we were told that Linux would be the dominant mobile operating system, and that hasn't happened. I think it's a lesson that things, while also they happen very quickly, sometimes they don't happen as quickly as we're expecting. And so whenever we talk about technology on this podcast, we're always talking about the latest thing. But just sometimes the sort of the wonder still gets to me when I see what I can now do with the phone. And they really are the equivalent of what computers were doing 10 years ago. You know, you've got the equivalent of the earlier Pentium processors pretty much sitting in your pocket if you've got one of the more recent phones. And quick statistics, something like the N95 itself, you know, 3 or 4 years old now, is something like 32 to 64 times more powerful than the computer that was in the Apollo 11 spaceship. Now, of course, you can draw all kinds of fairly meaningless comparisons like that, but it's just a pause for thought. And Steve, is there anything that you sort of remember from the last decade that sort of makes you go, wow, that we now have that we didn't have then?
I think the you mentioned megabytes and storage space. I think that's the huge take. I mean, I know we've had massive improvements and massive convergence, pulling all sorts of different gadgets from watches to cameras to GPS. And so convergence has to be a big thing. But this storage aspect, I can still remember vividly going down to Clove, and it's Clove Technology. I actually drove to Clove Technology to buy a 128 kilobyte solid state memory disk. And this was for a Cyan Palm Top back in the mid 1990s, one of the forebearers of Symbian.
And, hold on, it's been a while. I've got something into the Cyan box. There we go. Thanks, Steve.
And Ewan's actually got one to demonstrate. If you're watching the enhanced podcast on the video feed, you'll be able to see it. But yes, 128 kilobytes. And then we're talking about 4 megabytes for the 7650, which seems itself absolutely insignificant and tiny in, here in 2010. So I think Moore's law and more, I would say, in every department.
I think it's what's interesting is what hasn't changed. The fact that I had a laugh there when Rafe went, you know, and the 7650 had 4 meg of RAM, and we've got much more now. I said, well, have you picked up an X6 recently? No, 4 meg of RAM would be quite nice. You know, we're still predicting that Linux will be the dominant system. We're still predicting that Symbian is dying. We're still carrying phones that are about 130 cc's in volume, about 3.5 inches by 2 inches, with a screen size of about 3 inches on the diagonal as well. What, you know, the sort of outside stuff, the main things, haven't really changed at all in the last 10 years. You could argue, obviously, I've been quite contrary here. Yes, we're putting more in these devices, but we're still getting the same amount of time out of the battery for the extra things we're doing. And we're still using the phones to do what humans have done for years and years and decades and centuries, which is to communicate and talk and just interface with other people. The fact that, that we're... Yeah.
I'm going to rename you Ewan Buzzkill.
but I think Ewan has an important point here. Really, the story of the last decade is convergence. Without any fundamental shift in sort of the form factor or the shape of devices. I mean, if you look at the sort of current buzz around touchscreens, and I do think touchscreens have a very important part, but I think hybrid is the future, but we'll get on to that in a minute. If you look at the sort of, for example, the Nexus One, you know, first phone, I guess, announced of the new... decade in the sort of, you know, big space anyway, that doesn't really look all that much different to the PDAs that we had that were sort of slate form factor. Okay, you've added in a phone, a camera, music, GPS, everything else, but in one sense there hasn't been a fundamental physical change in the devices or the look of the device, and in some ways the way we interact with them, what has been added into them, is a great deal more technology. So I think, you know, the story of the last decade is really convergence. And in one sense, that is the story that Nokia has told. And it was Nokia that, more than any other company, drove convergence in the mobile space. You know, as we talked about the 7650, you compare that today to the N86, which in one sense is the latest descendant. But equally well, I think you can, you know, draw a parallel to something like the, you know, the N97. Of course, the other thing that's happened is these devices have become much more readily available. You know, when we were talking about PDAs, we were talking about shipments in the low millions, and now we talk about smartphone shipments in the hundreds of millions. So I think the two trends I would draw from the last decade that really stand out for me are convergence, more technology, and, you know, there is Moore's law, of course, and I think Steve's right, you know, the staggering change there, you know, you just can't get your head around it. But the other thing is they become much more available as mass market. The question will be, is how will those trends continue, and are we going to see some more trends?
Actually, you know, I want to pick up on one thing you said there, Voith, which was Nokia drove the convergence in the mobile space. The difference now, 10 years, is that the mobile space is pretty much mature, as I said before, with the sort of same size and numbers and everything. What we're looking at now is the convergence of the internet space. And Nokia can't play in this space until they have their own internet space. So they're trying to grow Ovi at the same time, whereas Apple, arguably with the music store and the app store, have created their own space, and Mobile Me and Google, obviously, have that internet space as well. And I think that's where Nokia have stumbled in the last 10 years. But I actually think that I want to sum up the decade and what's changed the decade with one word, and it's not convergence, it's color. Because the hardware, we now have color screens on mobile devices. The devices we're talking about, the PDAs and the early phones, you know, didn't really see color until S60 came along. We didn't see color on the outside of devices to make them fashion items until this decade. Most of the, you know, your computers were either grey, beige boxes or black boxes, if you wanted to be daring. So the addition, and colour, of course, expands out everything, and there's the colour and richness that you have on the internet and the devices on the screen and everything. So I think this last decade has brought colour to our mobile technology.
That's a really great insight there. And I think you're right, you know, the rise of fashion. I mean, I think that's tied in with the mass market and the idea of devices as being absolutely essential. I mean, mobile phones, I think even 10 years ago, they were still, relatively speaking, a luxury item. Not everybody carried them about. It was certainly on the cusp of change there. But now I think everyone, you know, has a mobile device. It's become the most dominant consumer electronics product on the planet. And you're absolutely right as well about the sort of going forward, and we're now sort of starting to move towards our future predictions. But you're right, you know, the internet as the sort of next stage of convergence, that's the next thing on the trend. And, you know, I think you're right to say that Nokia struggled there. I think you can look at this in two ways. You know, they're in trouble because they're not able to meet it as well as other companies like Google and Apple and even arguably Microsoft. Of course, the other way you can look at it is compared to their traditional competitors, such as Motorola, such as Sony Ericsson, as Samsung. They actually have decided to make that transition sooner than they have and therefore might be ahead of the game. It's interesting that Motorola's really only found success by giving up its independence in software and, you know, becoming beholden to Google in one sense. And that's a danger that I think faces a lot of the manufacturers and has its own set of problems. So I guess Steve will corral us from preventing us using too much time here and move us on to sort of predictions for the next decade, where we see mobile going and where we see Symbian going. And
I think can I just say that one of the questions we had sent in for this podcast was from a username HGH. Azal, whoever pronounced that, saying, what are the reasons behind Nokia losing its glamour in the smartphone market? So looking forward, what's the thing about glamour and where can Nokia go in the next 10 years?
I'll take that one. That actually starts from the assumption that Nokia had glamour in the marketplace in the first place. Because glamour, fashion, and a must-have object, an object of desire, of lust, of texture that makes you want to reach out and touch it and feel it and hold it, not even use it, just move it around and feel the tactile contact and everything.
Sounds like me with the N95, really.
It does, yes, but did Nokia ever really have that? I think Nokia have great tools. And this is something I think you've addressed recently on the site, Steve, that, you know, they had the perfect chainsaw. And if you wanted to cut down a tree, that was fine. And they kept on making all these great tools, the 7650, the communicators, the AE series, the N series. But the second there was a sort of change maybe 3 or 4 years ago where we wanted our tools, you know, to be more than just chainsaws, apart from Adele, if you're listening, who has some lovely gold-plated Soviet earrings that actually are chainsaws. Most of the time, people don't wear heavy-duty power tools as fashion. I don't think Nokia had glamour in the first place, so they never lost it. It's just that they've not been able to adapt yet to create glamour and fashion, and they're just starting to get that now with devices like the X6, with the styling on the N97 Mini. They're starting to get there. So, Higgsal, I think it's a case of they never lost it. You're wrong. They just need to find it.
It's worth noting there that along with the word glamour, I would throw in words like fashion and trend. And that was part of an editorial on the site last week where I was talking about the current trend of the year, of the day, seems to be people want things that are pretty and with a touchscreen. I've been reading Ewan McLeod's excellent little weekly newsletter. Rafe will link to it in the show notes, in which he talks about his conversations with other normobs in the last week or so, where they're saying, oh, no, iPhone's very passe. The next big thing is BlackBerry's and BlackBerry Messenger. And I'm thinking, I can't keep up. It's trend after trend, fashion after fashion. No one can predict what will happen in terms of glamour, fashion and trends in the next 10 years. All I can do is approach things from an engineer's point of view, which is how I was trained, and to look at the raw functionality. I'm afraid I'm too old to keep up with the Joneses on fashion.
If we wait long enough, DOS will come back into fashion.
Yes.
Absolutely. The command line. I mean, my perspective on this would really be that one of the reasons that Nokia, and I understand the points that everyone made, and I think it's perfectly valid to say it's not, you know, it's a very subjective term, this, but I think part of the reason Nokia's lost the glamour or is perceived, you know, not to be the top end of the market. I mean, you can look at the technological reasons, and I think, you know, you can say a lot there. And I think also talking about the company DNA, the attitude that Nokia make sort of tools for an entire market and therefore address the market in a different way to the sort of the vertically integrated solutions, you know, like the iPhone, and to a certain extent like RIM devices as well. And I think the sort of resurgence in RIM is an interesting story in itself. You know, it shows you how something that, relatively speaking, an inferior technology in terms of the platform and some of the mechanics, can actually be trumped by something that provides a very good real world user experience. And I think everyone can learn from that. But I think if anything, the trend of the last few years is that sort of Nokia just faces so much more competition than it did 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, because Nokia in one sense went out and validated this market for high-end mobile devices, or high-end connected mobile devices, I should say, the sort of the smartphone, if you like, that a lot more companies wanted to get into this. And they, you know, have always traditionally been somewhat of a conservative company, and they were caught on the hop by the trend for touchscreens, which they're now making a comeback. And I think you look at devices like the 5530 and the 5800 and so on, and you'll see that probably Nokia will sell an awful lot of touchscreen devices or touchscreen smartphones to outsell a lot of the high-end ones. But of course, it still doesn't quite capture that media bubble, if you like. And that media bubble is something that is, I think, far more apparent today. And that's partly down to sort of new media in general. I mean, if we look back to something like, and I'm going to put money in the box here, something like the launch of the Cyan devices, you know, they were the ultimate in mobile technology. And that's, you know, very European. And America was doing its own thing. And these days we're a lot more global in the outlook. And so we're much more affected by markets from elsewhere. And so it is an interesting question, because I do think Nokia, to a certain extent, has lost the glamour in smartphone. It's not the sort of the talked about as a top-end object like the N95 was. You know, do I think they'll come back? Yes, you look at devices like that was excited, you know, the excitement that was generated by the N900, for example. And I think we're going to be a bit short on that in the first half of this year. But when some of the Symbian 4 devices coming along, I think particularly if you bear in mind their accessibility to the mass market, that's going to get very interesting. I think Sony Ericsson are probably quite capable of producing some devices that will excite in the next year from the Symbian platform. But I do think going forward we will see a bit of a disconnect between, as I say, kind of the mass market and these vertically integrated products from iPhone and to a certain extent some of the Nexus devices on Android, which are intended to be relatively high-end.
You were talking, Ralph, about the media bubble and some of these high-end devices. I think you're absolutely right. That's kind of what they're in. And I've been watching the news from CES in the States, from Las Vegas this week. And you see almost every other device has got a 3.7-inch OLED screen. The one device I think I saw, kind of semi-phone-come tablet, 4.8-inch screen. And some of these devices are just getting stupidly large. And you have to... My prediction for the next 10 years would be that there will be a trend away from large screen devices back to smaller, more pocketable devices, and that voice will come in more. Yep. We've seen things like the Google mobile search application, where you just say what you want to search for, say what the question you want the answer for, like a calculation or a function. And we've seen things like VLingo, third-party app, that lets you dictate your text messages to people while you're driving, for example. And I think there's going to be a lot more of that, more intelligent software, more intelligent backends on the net. And I think we'll see screens getting smaller, but far more intelligence in terms of voice. That's my big prediction.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and CES is particularly interesting. I mean, looking at all the announcements that come out, I mean, to my mind, the first Nexus phone from Android, which looks like a really gorgeous-looking device, but isn't really that different to the other Android devices, you know, something like the Motorola Milestone or the Droid, as it's known in the States, that has come before. So it didn't really stand out for me. The announcement that actually caught my attention was HTC's Smart, which is based on the Qualcomm Brew platform, I believe. And that has mass market potential, and indeed to sort of compete with Symbian at the lower end. So it's got the HTC Sense UI on the front end. You either love it or you hate it, a bit like the Marmite, I guess. But very little buzz around that. It was all about the Nexus One, which is just another Android device. And there's only room for so many of those at the top end. And particularly interesting that Google's selling it itself. I mean, I wonder what some of the traditional mobile manufacturers think of that. Great deal for HTC, I think. But, you know, Motorola and Samsung may be... less happy about that kind of move. It is sort of opening up the US market to sort of SIM-free devices, as we've had in Europe for a long time. So I think it's a move to be welcomed. And if that sort of thing catches on, I think Nokia could benefit just as much as Google might, in terms of the idea that Nokia devices are expensive in the States, which we actually know is not really the case, because of subsidies and all that kind of thing. But yes, we've had one really great prediction there from Steve. We should try and keep this podcast moving and go on to the next prediction. Ewan, have you got a big prediction for the next 10 years? Any with perhaps a bit of emphasis on Symbian at all?
I think so, because I think what we're seeing now in the industry is we're at a very interesting crossroads. And Symbian has always made a strong plea that it is an open operating system, not open source, but open. Anybody can join in and go on. And I think that with Apple and Google especially moving into strong positions in the sort of top five or six operating systems, that we're going to see a trend to less open operating systems where there's going to be much less freedom. App stores are a good example. Locking down that you can only install things that the manufacturer says is okay. This is something that we can see on the iPhone. I suspect that when Apple ever get away to launching their Jesus tablet, then it will be based on the iPhone OS so they can keep control of the app streams. Google are saying that it's going to be open, but I think that, you know, they're going to have a look and see what Apple has, this lovely closed ecosystem, and try and get some of that as well. The Ovi store, you know, it's one of many stores, but it's very easy to see the next couple of years that the manufacturers kind of protecting their investment in the devices and the consumers and creating silos around the phone. And that's fundamentally a different direction to which way Symbian is going. And I'm just intrigued to see if Symbian has enough pull to keep the major manufacturers, I mean, we've mentioned Motorola there, moving down towards the Google stuff. Will Symbian have enough pull to keep open as the primary way of doing things? Or will this closed protectionist way be the one that wins out in the next decade? That, and I also believe that Google's Nexus 7 will be the first phone that actually thinks it's Harrison Ford.
Well, thank you, Ewan. I think maybe you're being a bit pessimistic there. That's great, different viewpoint. I mean, I'll take a slightly
more optimistic tension
viewpoint. Yeah, absolutely. But I do think you're right in one sense. It is a battle between open and closed, and I think that might be something that becomes more prevalent in the next decade. And I think to really fulfill the promise of mobile in terms of, you know, when you start thinking about cloud computing, recommendations, you know, becoming a tool that is more than just a communication device, that is kind of your digital heartbeat, I think open systems and open standards are going to be absolutely essential, and they will work best when married with an open approach. And I think that's within the Symbian Foundation and to a lesser extent, but still very much so, Nokia's DNA. And it's to an extent, at least, the antithesis of Google and Apple. And I think you can, you know, it's not a black and white picture. There are shades of grays all over the place here. But I do think if Symbian is to succeed, it really will be because of the triumph of open over closed. And if we're looking 10 years ahead, you know, predictions are very difficult. And Symbian will have a lot of work ahead of it, and it will be all about execution. But I think there's every chance it will still be around in 10 years, and I think it could be very successful. If you take an optimistic viewpoint, you could say that something like Samsung may come back to Symbian, even if they're running Badr on top of it. And it really is about a battle between Symbian and Linux. And at the moment, there's a lot of momentum behind Linux, but I think some of the technical advantages of Symbian, particularly in their re-architecting of their operating system to a three-planed approach, will start to pay substantial dividends if they can get over a hump in the next few years. But it will be very interesting to see where that goes. I think if we're talking about wider mobile trends, the thing I'm going to throw in here is I think we may at last see a move away from the traditional form factor of mobile phones. If we're looking, you know, 10 years ahead, you know, many of you will have watched the sort of various visions that companies have put out. And I think a noticeable trend here is a move away from just one block device. It does become your heartbeat, but the actual sort of heart of the device is just one thing. And you'll have projections onto, you know, screens, onto glasses, sort of heads-up displays, but onto windows, onto your TV, and that will be augmented by sensors all around you in the clothing that you wear as you walk past them, about temperature. You know, they'll become health monitors, so, you know, become your doctor on your phone, if you like, because there's embedded sensors all around you. And at the moment, all the sensors are embedded on the phone, but I think there's a lot of potential for them to be elsewhere, you know, in your footwear. And, you know, 10 years ahead is a long way out. So, I mean, what Steve said about devices getting smaller again, I think he's absolutely on the money there, because there'll be less of an idea of the mobile as an individual object, and your sort of mobile network will be a whole cluster of to devices or objects, I should say, kind of the idea of smart objects and the Internet of Things comes in here, of course, that are all around you. And so each one of us will have a sort of personal mobile network stroke infrastructure rather than just carrying a single device in our pocket. Of course, there will be a Unity device because, you know, there's a certain inevitability about needing something in, you know, in the hand. But it's 10 years ahead, you know, looking at the kind of things we could have with augmented reality and additional sensors, this is when, you know, all the things like AI start to come into play. So it's very difficult. But I think the move away from the traditional monoblock sort of form factor with, you know, screen and some kind of input mechanism may well happen, or at least that will be very much augmented by, as I say, smart objects in a cloud around you as you move throughout the world.
Partly why I mentioned audio, not just for audio, for your own voice to be transcribed into text, but also the other way around, so that as I'm walking down the street, I've got a smartphone or a personal media device sitting in my pocket. But most of the time, I won't need to look at the screen because, as you say, with all the sensors around within my body and around me, it can feed information to me. So it can tell me when things happen. It can warn me of upcoming appointments. It can tell me things about the area I'm traveling through if I want to, all on a little Bluetooth headset and microphone combination. If I want to transcribe a message, I simply say, take a message to Rafe. Sorry, running late because of snow. And this will all happen and be transcribed perfectly and all happen without me even looking at a screen. So with the vast number of extra functions which don't need a screen, I don't see the need for these huge 4-inch screen tablet devices. They're maybe for, you know, carrying around the home and moving from kitchen to bathroom or wherever.
My wife's got one of those devices.
And what's it called?
Ewan.
Well, But there we go. I mean, I think what we've demonstrated here is it's very difficult to look that far out, but it will be remarkably interesting to see. And certainly for the next few years, it will be interesting to see how our predictions do going forward.
I think you're looking too far ahead. I think what you guys are describing is going to be at least 20 to 25 years ahead. And even then, it's only going to be in small parts of the Western world. I think the majority of the world's population are going to still be using candy bar phones that have roughly the same form factor of the screen at the top, some buttons at the bottom, potentially a touch interface nowadays. And I think in 2020, that's still going to be the dominant form factor. And all these G-Wiz extra sensors and everything will be available to about 50,000 people in the world and Robert Scoble.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the idea of ubiquitous computing, which is part of what I'm describing, is very much a Western phenomenon in the next decade. And I think you're absolutely right in pointing out that there will be more heterogeneity than there is now. You know, today will look like a very homogeneous usage of mobile devices. You know, in the future, there will be a great divide. And actually, it could become quite interesting when you start looking at, you know, things like fundamental human rights. You know, do you have a right to have a mobile phone with some kind of signal attached to it and all that kind of thing? But yes, you're right. But, you know, of course, in the next decade, we should reach the point where at least everybody on the planet, in a theoretical sense, has access to a mobile device and to the internet with all the implications that brings for a completely connected humanity. But you're right, Ewan. I mean, if we look now at the basic devices that you can buy in the shops, they're pretty much what you were getting on the 7650 10 years ago. Not even necessarily that powerful. You know, the very simplest Nokia 1110 phones or the Nokia 2 series phones, not that far away from what the 7650 was capable. Of course, there are some differences. So I think it's fair to say what we consider state of the art now will only just be getting into the very lowest end phones in 10 years' time. So yeah, excellent point.
Yeah. And I should point out that people in the virtual All About Symbian podcast chat room are reading far too much into my off the cuff comment about taking a media tablet from the kitchen to the bathroom. Far too much. So let's not go there at all. But instead, we'll move on to news. Just a few brief items. If you've been looking at the site over the last couple of days or you feel you might have missed out, then do check these out. There's a video up showing some of the upcoming firmware for the Samsung i910 HD. It's due out by the end of January. It's got kinetic scrolling in most dialogues and screens, but not the application screen. So basically, it's the same as on the Nokia 5530 and X6. So it's partial kinetic scrolling. But there is a much faster version of the camera application, and web seems to have had an overhaul as well. So well worth getting, and I'll be reporting back on that in due course. Nokia has been at CES with a big stand, as far as I can see from the videos and photos that have been coming out of the event. But there's no new hardware launches. They've just been showing off their existing devices. They have launched a climate mission game, which is all part of Nokia's love, quite rightly, of eco things and green technology around the world. And you can learn about the saving the planet and have fun at the same time. And that's a free game in the Ovi store right now. They've also announced Ovi Maps Racing.
Ooh, I like this one.
I'll show you. Ewan's going to fire it up It'll zoom on his location in Lothian, near Edinburgh, and he'll be able to race around the streets of Lothian. Well, that's the aim anyway. So I'll let you review that when it comes out, and that's due out in the next couple of weeks. So moving on to a couple of extra questions that have been just fired into us for the All About Symbian Insight. Julian Grail says, how can I get cost-effective folder and HTML support for my N97 and my Exchange server? And I can think of only one person on the planet competent to answer this question, Mr. Blanford.
Well, the answer here is a little bit waffly because it does depend on the version of the Exchange server that Julian's using. But if Nokia Mail for Exchange isn't doing it for you, really your only other option is DataViz's RoadSync, which does have much better folder and HTML support, and I believe does work well on the N97. It's certainly what I've been using for a while, and I find it more effective for the time being than Mail for Exchange. The difference isn't as great as it once was, but both companies, both Nokia and DataViz, continue to develop it, and generally I find RoadSync is a little bit ahead. It can be a bit memory hungry compared to Mail for Exchange, but for something as essential as email, I find it well worth the resources that it uses.
Okay. Second question from BB Philly Guy. Is there any surprise package by Nokia for Mobile World Congress next month? Any guesses? And I'll leap in briefly with I would guess at least one new N-series Symbian device. I have some of my Nokia contacts have disappeared off into mysterious departments in recent weeks and months. And I think, well, they've got to be working on something really exciting. I just don't know what yet. So I'm guessing I would place money on one new N-series device and one new E-series device. I suspect the E-series device might be a fairly low-end affair. So we've just had the E72, which is classed by Nokia as high-end. So maybe something slightly lower specified than that. Rafe, you in any comments?
There are no surprise packages by Nokia for Mobile World Congress because they're not at Mobile World Congress. They're just down the road.
Picky.
Yeah, picky. But that's the sort of things that you need to have when you're trying to take over the world. And if Nokia were only so picky about phones, then we'd be happy. I actually think we'll see something probably just the week before Mobile World Congress for Nokia to try and get a little bit of the news cycle, because we've had Google had their time, Apple are going to have their time at the end of January. So I think in that period, in the couple of days before MWC, I think Nokia will announce a phone there. They may bracket MWC, they may do an N series before and an E series after, but I think they'll announce an N, an E, and probably another touch screen based series 40. No knowledge, just my gut guess on that, just before MWC.
Well, I'll say here that obviously there are going to be some new phone announcements. Nokia are going to MWC, albeit in their own way. I think what you said is perfectly reasonable and what we can expect to see. But in terms of surprise packages, it's difficult really to pick out anything. But I think you're right. We will see some more touchscreen devices and we will see some more QWERTY devices. And I think it's quite possible we will see a combined touch and QWERTY device now, whether that's E-series or as an entry level, as a classic series, I guess, or whatever. It's difficult to tell. Interestingly, Nokia have managed to keep things relatively quiet this time compared to previous years. There have been far fewer leaks, which I have to say I'm quite pleased about, because it always makes it a bit more interesting if you get it all happen at the actual event rather than sort of spoiled beforehand. Maybe a bit, but people may not agree with me there. But I think the other thing to look out for here is we will start hearing about a sort of refresh of OviStore, and we'll hear a whole bunch of new service announcements, which are just as big as the devices these days. If you think about something like Nokia Maps, for example, we had the big update, relatively speaking, in September at Nokia World in terms of Ovi Maps as a platform, and I think we will see big movement there in February. Sort of, it tends to be the 6-monthly release cycle, and I suspect there may be a sort of quite a bit of Ovi stuff going on in terms of services. So that will probably be the surprise package, I guess, because it's always a bit difficult to predict what's going on there. But of course, the big emphasis will be on Symbian 3, because by then it will have been released. I mean, it's sort of released now, if you like. But I would imagine MWC, or just before MWC, as Euron mentioned, will see the first Symbian 3 device from Nokia. Although those devices are really going to come out onto the market in the summer, and Nokia is tending these days not to announce too far ahead of time, I would expect, just because of the event as it is, that Nokia will announce their first Symbian 3 device at MWC. So I think that's the surprise package that most people are looking for.
Yeah, and of course, Sony Ericsson have a history of announcing just before MWC again to steal a few news cycles. So I'm sure there'll be something from them as well.
Yeah, a couple of devices from Sony Ericsson. I would have thought there'll be a couple of Symbian ones and probably a couple of Android ones and a couple of proprietary Sony Ericsson OS ones. Other than that, I think Android is probably, as it has been dominating at CES, will probably be quite loud at MWC. Compared to last year, but I'm also expecting some big announcements from Microsoft as well. I mean, they always like to make a splash at MWC. We had, I think it was Windows Mobile 6.5, was it, last at MWC last time round? So no doubt they'll be talking about their future plans as well.
Many people have been asking me, so Steve, when is Nokia going to release a successor to the E90? And I have to say that the N97 Mini is darn close. If you pictured an N97 Mini with an E-Series badge on it and the full editing version of QuickOffice, iQuickOffice Premier built in rather than just the viewing only, maybe a couple of extra E-Series sort of intranet and presentation driving utilities, I think they'd be pretty darn close to an E91 or E92. And I've no idea. I'm not speaking under any NDA here or outside of an NDA. But if I were Nokia, that's what I would do. I'd take the N97 Mini design and hardware, build quality, and I'd build on that and enhance the software package and give it an E-Series brand name. So maybe we'll see that. People keep asking me whether we'll see something with Xenon Flash from Nokia again. I think we will. I heard a whisper on the net about a year ago from a reliable industry source that Nokia were ordering up 12 megapixel camera sensors, and they've got to be used somewhere, somehow, sometime. So maybe this is the year. Maybe this MWC is where Nokia announced a 12 megapixel Xenon flashed camera centric smartphone. I do hope so, and that's one I'll be looking forward to. But yes, fun.
Yeah, and of course the emphasis will be on mass market devices for Symbian, rather than necessarily the high end stuff. So expect to see more in the lines of the £100 Symbian phone as we had with the 5230. Maybe less exciting in terms of big splash, but probably far more reaching in terms of how many people it will address.
Now, spoil sport. We want Xenon. I think we're running out of time, guys, but we'll return to normal operation and a few more questions and a greater emphasis on news in the next Insight podcast. But for now, I think we'll finish up. A reminder of our Twitter accounts. If you want to follow us in real time, there's the main AAS Twitter account. There's also Rafe Blandford, Steve Litchfield, and Ewan. No surname, just Ewan. And you can follow us day to day and comment on our goings on. But until then, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me, Rafe, and a happy new year to everyone, of course.
And goodbye from them too, and me, and all the best for Burns Night, which is coming up soon.
All right. Happy New Year, everyone.